James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose Direct Chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
All right, we are back and live. Lionel Parkinson is our guest. He's been on here several times in reference to his book, The Holy Virus, which, briefly, what it states is the Hebrew scriptures were edited and infiltrated with the Babylonian sacrificial rites when the Jews were slaughtered and held in captive in slavery in about 586 B.C. And also the New Testament books were edited and revised to be more in line with the Pharisaical animal sacrifices, such as from Paul, and up and through 325, culminating, I guess, with exists with Roman law and the Holy Roman Empire and the Council of Nicaea, which then kind of weeded out books, writings that to make kind of a standard kind of a canon. So, I mean, the canonic scriptures are really kind of standardized, what the whole point was. In other words, political and agendas and all that, and so forth. In that book, at the end, he also included a little-known gospel said to be composed by the 12 disciples of Jesus and lost to antiquity. This book was possibly referred to by some of the early church fathers, but it has disappeared. Then an Irish clergyman, Reverend G.J. O'Sally, I think I'm saying it right, claims to have discovered the original gospel from which the present four gospels were derived, which he says was preserved in one of the Buddhist monasteries in Tibet, where it was hidden by some of the SVN communities for safety from the hands of the corruptors, and now for the first time has been translated from the Aramaic. This is about 1890 that this took place. Osley. It is Lionel's belief that this is the true gospel taught by Jesus and recorded by his 12 disciples. Now, from a biblical perspective, the evidence is weak that the work by the Reverend is genuine amongst the using the methods to prove used in standard textual criticism. I mean, following the paths of the copies. For example, it says to be translated by the Aramaic, yet we don't have any Aramaic manuscripts, at least publicly. It's said to be in the Vatican archives. Also, Reverend Osley is confessed to not be an Aramaic scholar, also getting help in dreams and visions, quote unquote, at night to translate it. Now, compounding things, the contradictions to long held doctrines said to be derived from the Standard Bible are adding much more. So, this Gospel of 12 directly contradicts things in the canon Bible, and it actually has a lot more detail and more items in it. Which, you know, if you if you're a church with long-held doctrinal beliefs in the inerrant word of the Bible, and then this comes along contradicting it, of course, that's going to be trouble. However, now this is very interesting. Lionel, with his professional experience as a document verifier, uses tools to see the internal flow and consistency to determine if a copied document has been edited without having the original document to go by. You can see it internally without actually comparing it to the original. And tonight, Lionel joins us to talk about the Gospel of the Holy Twelve, which and find out, is this really the most true account of the life and Jesus teachings of Jesus from those closest to him? Welcome back, Lionel, to do this.
Well, thanks a lot, James. Yeah, it's great to be back on your program. I especially appreciate you covering this particular issue because I think it's one that just never gets any coverage. It doesn't seem like anybody really wants to bring this to light. And it really does need to be examined and examined thoroughly before anybody just, shelves it and ignores it. Because there is what I believe to be an accurate collective consensus of writings outside the Bible that far endorses this version versus the Romanized, canonicalized version that has been presented to us through the King James Version. It was through this, making this comparison, made me sway heavily in its favor as being far more accurate and allows me to say confidently, at least, that the Gospel of the Holy Twelve has not been tampered with by previously Babylonian doctrines and Roman beliefs, especially that came through the Pharisaic line, such as the self-professed Paul. So through this program, I hope to cover some of the historical data and present that to your listening audience so that they can arrive at a little bit more informed decision on whether this version is indeed accurate. I cannot say definitively that it is the perfect will of God or even the perfect gospel according to Jesus, because as an examiner, I know I would need the original to examine it, and as far as the examining actual documents, that road has grown cold for, thousands of years, so it's impossible for anyone to say that this is definitively the true story of Jesus. All I can say is comparing it to the four Gospels of the King James Version, I can say that it is a far more accurate one that people should take a closer look at rather than just blatantly and flippantly accepting the four Gospels as it was presented to us through more of a Roman government rather than through the stamp of approval of the apostles or Jesus himself. None of these men had the opportunity to look at what people look at today and say, yes, this is what happened, or no, this is not what happened. We don't have that. So what I'm going to try and cover with this program tonight is bring some historical data that is hopefully a collective accurate consensus that will help shed some light to this one version, and hopefully it'll be a great entertaining program.
Well, and I appreciate that, because what is kind of lacking in the more traditional evidential sense is other copies of it and so forth and so on, and so your historical perspective will be greatly helped. What I personally did, what I will bring to this, is that having listened to the Bible on tape dozens and dozens and dozens of times, when I made a audio version of this Gospel of 12 with reading software that I have, I listened to it many times. Excuse me. What I heard in it was, I heard things that were more descriptive and clear and explained some ambiguous things found in the classical Gospels, the canon Gospels. It went on to explain more about it. It brought up things that weren't there, kind of conspicuously absent, and it also was more consistent throughout as far as like contradictions of principles. It was very, thing was brought up, it made sense, and it continued to make sense throughout the whole gospel, even though there was alleged to be 12 authors with their experiences from all dealing with Jesus. No contradictions that I've noticed in my studying of it. So, I mean, I can What I did notice also, we go on, we'll talk along tonight, is that there are many reasons why the people who adhere to the canonical gospel would, forgetting all of what we just said, wouldn't want it, because there are certain things that are absolutely opposite that is taught in the canonical Bible, that to the point where certain sacred doctrines, which are based on these passages in the canonical Bible, not only finds no support in here, but is actually, the evidence is to the contrary. So, I mean, I can explain, I can understand why someone who's tied to that other way. For example, in your book, you talk about the holy virus being this need for a blood sacrifice for redemption. Well, clearly, in the Gospel of 12, it's not only is it not there, but it's actually explained by Jesus many times as not being how one is redeemed, but by repentance and so forth. So it's going to be very interesting. Did I lose you?
Oh. Yeah, I think it's we'll bring out some very important points. And I noticed to do this book, the Gospel of Holy 12, justice, if I had to just throw it in someone's lap and say, if they asked me, what's the most important part of this whole book, I would tell them it's simply 12 commandments that Jesus wanted to plant into this earth to change the earth, to change men's minds, get them to repent and think about the kingdom that he is king of on this planet, and not to go into any other kingdom. That is it. And to enter into his kingdom, one would have to keep these commandments. And they're very, very easy commandments to keep, but you have to show love toward your fellow man, and you have to show love toward the other creations that God has created on this planet, irregardless of what kind of shape the world is in at that time frame that you're stuck in. So this is the essential part of that that book, is to get people to enter into his kingdom through this list of commandments, which are 12. And this is also mentioned in the four Gospels in three specific areas in the book of John, where Jesus states over and over, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my commandments. But there is no list. And as an examiner, I needed to find this list, and I could not find any list of commandments coming from Jesus other than through this one version. The question remains is, how do I know that these are the real commandments he's referring to in the book of John? And this is one way that we can start analyzing the one doctrine in what this really comes down to, is a comparison of the four Gospels up against the Gospel of the Holy 12. And logically, if you're going to have an uncorrupted version, you're going to have one where it was collectively put together by all 12 apostles, whereas that would make the most sense to me. Whereas when we're dealing with the four Gospels of the King James Version, we're given alleged names given on four separate books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, none of which can be attributed to any four of those men. I should also break it down that only John and Matthew were considered apostles. Luke and Mark were never considered apostles. They were outside that loop. There is absolutely no evidence that any of these men were attributing to any of these books that they slapped their names on to make the four alleged gospels more acceptable. No one questions this, and that there is absolutely no definitive evidence that would indicate that any four of those men were the authors of any four of those gospels presented to us through the King James Version. On the other hand, the Gospel of the Holy 12 is indicating to us that it is a collective work, but none of the names are directly attributed to all 12 as being the authors as well. So they probably appointed just one author as they went through the whole story and put together what they felt was the most accurate.
Like you'd have somebody who would be like a scribe or taking, you know, someone would be putting it down, a collective creation, but perhaps only a few of them actually doing the physical writing.
Yes, there are some writings outside the Bible that would indicate that Philip was the so-called writer, as the rest would have, you know, accumulated their knowledge and made as accurate the statements of Jesus throughout the course of their time with him. This is the assumption, and when I first studied this version, I knew I had to put tests to it that I know that it would not be able to pass, because I knew that there were sections in the four Gospels that were so far off in accuracy that I knew if there was any parts of the Gospel of the Holy 12 trying to copy anything out of the four Gospels that I knew were inaccurate, I knew then that this Ousley would have been a fraud, or anybody that might have attributed putting it together prior to Ousley even finding it. So rather than using names, I'm actually trying to make comparisons about what I know is collective accurate data versus inaccurate data, and then seeing if the Gospel of the Holy 12 can survive this test. The first test that I put it to was, I should back up just a little bit since we're now just starting to analyze this book. The Gospel of the Holy 12 starts out as if it looks like the book of Luke. If anybody, ever had a copy of this version, if you'll notice that the book of Luke's narration, the first chapter is taken out, but again, it starts out similar to the beginnings of Jesus at the time of Herod. And as you read on, the first chapter, second chapter, third chapter of Luke will read somewhat very similar to the Gospel of the Holy 12, how it starts out. However, the doctrine is completely written in a way to present it a lot differently. So, starting out that way, I knew the first test that it would have to survive is Luke chapter 3, verse 23 and 31, because I knew that the genealogy of Jesus given in the book of Luke was a completely inaccurate genealogy. It covers, for instance, 41 fathers between King David to the time of Jesus. And it has Joseph, the alleged father of Jesus, coming down through the son of King David, Nathan, rather than King Solomon, as presented in the book of Matthew. I knew that the book of Matthew and the book of Luke were in contradiction of themselves concerning the genealogy of Jesus. For instance, in the book of Matthew, you have 26 fathers coming from King David, Solomon, all the way to Jesus. Whereas in the book of Luke, you have 41 fathers listed in between King David and Jesus, making the so-called Jesus of the book of Luke at least 250 years older than the book than the so-called Jesus in the book of Matthew. So I knew when whoever put together the book of Luke made a drastic mistake and gave inaccurate information there. So the first thing I checked to see is if the Gospel of the Holy Twelve would insert the same inaccurate version as presented to us in the book of Luke, and it doesn't show up at all. In fact, it covers a more equality genealogy and a more accurate genealogy going from King David to Solomon and on, but it also goes back even further. It also lists the mother's names as well, which is tells me that this was not an author that was influenced by your patriarchal Jewish culture, but somebody that was influenced with the teachings of equality, that women are equal in status before God.
Hold on a second. We'll just stop that. That's one of my own extra commercials. We'll let that go. So go ahead. Keep going.
So knowing that it could pass this first test told me several things. One, that its genealogy would be accurate based on the best information that I have today. Two, that it was influenced by a doctrine that gave women equality with men, which means this doctrine came from an outside Jewish source, because all Jewish authors always painted the man as the bloodline of any man was the superior recordable historical data that the Jews always recorded throughout the Old Testament and in the so-called New Testament given to us by the Romans. So whoever put together this book called the Gospel of the Holy Twelve was influenced by a more compassionate and equality type of a doctrine, but it was accurate and it passed the first initial test that I could put to it. And that's how I began, is a systematic and methodical means of testing this book to see if I could catch it recording any inaccurate, data on hopes that I could say, well, here, they just simply copied this from a King James Version and decided to throw their own doctrine in with it. I could, but I found that was not the case, that it was, whoever put this book together did have some kind of manuscript that had a different doctrine, but it was also lining up with a lot of the outside writings of very accurate historians and similar doctrines that were written at the time of the first church and the birth of the first church during that time frame. So these were the things that I was looking at the very beginning. The second test that I placed on it was I knew that the birth and the age of Jesus was not being accurate portrayed by modern churches today, and I knew that Jesus was not a 33-and-a-half-year-old man at the time of the crucifixion, based on when the census was taken and when King Herod historically died and how much time he spent in Egypt as a little boy when he was called out of Egypt and immediately after King Herod had passed away. So I knew that just historically I had enough data, accurate data, to compare it up to what the Gospel of Holy Twelve was specifically stating how old he was at the time of the crucifixion. And my historical data came up with just 2 years off of its exact mention of how old Jesus really was. So this amazed me that they would come out with this type of deliberate data, and just just bluntly give out how old he was at the time. In this version, the Gospel of Luke 12 states emphatically that he was 49 years of age. The historical data that I was able to accumulate, I came up with somewhere between 46 and 47 years of age based on the data given to me in not only the Bible, but the historians and other historical data that kind of pinpoints things a little closer. So I was amazed that this version called the Gospel of the Holy Twelve could blatantly make statements and give us information, tidbits that have never been discussed in any church whatsoever because they're not looking at this version at all. So continuing on, I had to examine what I felt was the most important is the very commandments of Jesus, because this is the culmination of his whole doctrine. This is what represented his blood and his flesh that he's sacrificing into the world to try and change it. And by people obeying these commandments, the remission of their sins would be omitted. You know, they would be erased if they would just follow these simple commandments. And they are very, very simple. When you break the whole ministry of Jesus down, it comes down to these simple commandments. And they are very, very simple, but yet mankind does not want to obey a very simple list of commandments. They want to enslave their own fellow man, and they start at a very early age by enslaving the animals, by recreating laws that God never, and even Jesus said, never gave into the world, such as sacrificing animals for the remission of sins. I've talked about this on earlier programs, how Babylon, at the beginning of the new year, would sacrifice a lamb for the remission of the people's sins at the temple. This took place far in the past, behind the time of the story of Exodus. This was known as the beginning of the New Year festival, called the Akitu festival, and they would literally have a priest go in and sacrifice a lamb. And this is recorded in the International Bible Encyclopedia under the term Babylon. And according to their Seleucid texts, they would sacrifice a lamb on the same, almost within the same week of the same month as being presented to us on the Passover Sabbath, as this story is given to us now through the Jewish culture, as the sacrificing of the lamb on the Passover Sabbath. And this story, I believe, was simply backdated into the Exodus story when their history was rewritten by the Babylonians, because they practiced a very similar ritual. And it was conducted at the very beginning of the new year, just like in the Jewish culture. So I had to look at this as a conflict that I saw in the Gospel of the Holy Twelve. They said, no, we don't practice this. We don't sacrifice animals. Our custom was not to sacrifice animals on the Sabbath. It is completely done differently. Whereas from a Pharisee point of view, they went back to the Levitical law, which I have historically pinpointed to be a Babylonian ritual. So I knew that the Gospel of the Holy Twelve would pass that test, because it presents a Jesus that is very much against animal bloodshed sacrifices, and he, not once, not twice, not three times, but I counted up to five different times in the Gospel of the Holy Twelve, where he cites Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 22, where he states over that God never commanded such atrocities. And I should just read just a little segment as one of those coming out of the Gospel of the Holy Twelve. And it comes out of the Gospel of the Holy Twelve also is broken down into what is called lections. And they'll still utilize a Roman numeric lection number system to identify the whole story of Jesus. But this one is simply starts out saying, as also Jeremiah bears witness when he said, this is Jesus speaking, concerning the blood offerings and sacrifice, I, the Lord God, commanded none of these things in the day that you came out of Egypt. But only this, I commanded you to do righteousness, walk in the ancient path, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with their God. He's simply citing over and over again this statement that God is apparently speaking through Jeremiah in the Old Testament. He's endorsing sections in the Old Testament, but he's discarding the rest. And every section I've been able to find that Jesus would quote from, it was pretty much from King David, Isaiah, and this Jeremiah. Even out of the four Gospels, you'll only find Jesus pretty much picking out statements coming from, you know, King David and Isaiah and Jeremiah. So in that respect, the four Gospels kind of line up a little bit, but they leave out this compassion toward the animals section, which the Romans would not have tolerated under Constantine, being a murderer of his family members based on historical data, they were very much into a warlike community, and they knew in order to control people, they had to control them with violence. And that violence started at a sacrificial level as well. They would even sacrifice animals and read the entrails before they would go to war, as some of the historians would recall. So these are just some of the tests that I put the Gospel of the Holy Twelve up against the four Gospels, and found it just to be far more informative and more accurate. But there's no way I can say definitively this is the perfect Gospel. All I can say is that it's not influenced by Babylonian writings and Roman editing. And one will find, if they ever do a comparison between the four Gospels of the New Testament King James Version up against the Gospel of the Holy Twelve, they'll be finding these differences that I'm mentioning, and I hope they follow up on it. I hope they remember these things that I'm saying, so that they'll be able to find other ways to test this new version. And because I think that the path is pretty much cold on both documents, the Gospel of the Holy Twelve. There's no way we're going to be able to find definitively through the best witnesses and accuracy of documents, because we're dealing with copies of copies of copies. And
There's a chance that Owsley, am I saying his name right? Owsley?
Yeah, I kind of pronounce it that way.
By his words, he got to see it in the Vatican archive. So I guess if it's there, I mean, it's improbable, but it's possible that it might surface. I guess that would be very nice.
The other historical data I've been able to bring about is documents called Clementine homilies, which when I was trying to find out whether or not this doctrine of compassion toward animals, naturally they would not sacrifice animals for the remission of their sins, because they did not conduct the Passover the same way. They would not, the John the Baptist, for instance, there was a reason why he lived outside the city. He would not partake of the Pharisee temple rites of sacrificing animals. And I think this doctrine that he was proclaiming grabbed the attention of a lot of people, and it was drawing so many people back in that time frame that they knew through common sense. And one, with if a person does have common sense, knows that an all-powerful, compassionate, merciful God would not demand his human subjects to show absolutely no mercy and compassion on other creations on this planet in the form of animal sacrifices. I know that the Romans were able to spin the whole gospel into a bloodshed sacrifice through the writings of Paul and make it into, rather than the commandments of Jesus being the blood and the flesh of Jesus, that you're supposed to eat and take in, drink his blood and drink and eat his flesh, when he's referring to is his doctrine, his commandments. Those commandments were carefully lifted out of the four gospels, and they inserted, again, the writings of Paul, and they substituted a bloody shed sacrifice, the Babylonian sacrifice doctrine, and made Jesus the so-called lamb that would die for the sins of the world. And instead of making it look, rather than hearing the voice of Jesus according to his words, because he wanted people to follow him, he didn't want people to follow the voice of any Pharisee that comes after him. And he wanted to make sure that those that followed him closely would understand the difference between his interpretation of his flesh and his blood as they drank the fruit of the vine with the bread. It was to represent his doctrine, and that doctrine, when it is applied to their life, then their sins would be forgiven. And those commandments were very simple. Treat others the way you'd want them to treat you. Don't treat others the way you wouldn't want them to treat you as well. You know, it's just simply love, compassion, walk in the ancient ways, much like he recites in the book of Jeremiah. He's simply reiterating an old law that the Jews got away from when they were conquered by Babylon. They turned it into a bloody altar, slaughterhouse, temple, and that was why you get the story of Jesus getting mad at the temple, because he saw something he obviously didn't like, and he wanted to change things there. Now, the Gospel of the Holy 12 goes into depth why he did those things at the temple and why he got so mad, whereas the four Gospels just touches on it very lightly. You know, they just have him throwing over some tables and running the money changers out. But when you read the Gospel of the Holy 12, it gets a lot more in depth. He gets a lot more violent. He gets a lot more judgmental. He gets incredibly vicious with him, because he's trying to reestablish what he believes to be is the true love and compassion that has been lost through the hundreds of years of slavery under Babylonian and Persian and Roman laws. So he's simply, in this Gospel of the Holy 12, we're getting a better picture and a better light of how Jesus really thinks, of what he actually taught the people, why what he taught ignited so much fervor from the Pharisees. And that's why I decided to place this version in with my book as sort of a free addendum to my book. So as I'm gutting the Old Testament and explaining to the people that believe in there that every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Bible, they're following the Bible. They're not following every word that proceeds out of the Word of God. People are programmed now to believe that the whole Bible is every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And I'm telling them, no, your Bible has been corrupted, it's been changed, it's been altered, and it's been altered by some of the worst people in history. And Jesus came along to try and change things back, and apparently it didn't stick.
It didn't sit too well with them, and
it didn't, and they gained control again, and they controlled the Bible, and they put in the doctrines of a Pharisee instead of the true doctrines of Jesus and the apostles, and that's why you're looking at 13 books in the New Testament as an attribute to a false apostle, a man that never walked with Jesus, never talked with him, never was elected to be an apostle, and never was chosen or elected to be an apostle.
And there's actually writings in the Dead Sea Scrolls, or at least the Essene writings, that Paul and Peter and James have, Paul attacked them while they were preaching and so forth. And they used the name Paul. It didn't use the name Saul before his conversion. But we got to stop there for a break now. Lionel, I got to do a 10-minute segment for Free Energy, so I will get back to you after the top of the hour, and we will continue on that.
Great.
All right, so hold on. One of the things I want to talk about along the way here is that many people, such as Zeitgeist and others, talk about Jesus being one of the many saviors that came along. And in reality, he was repackaged to be one of these saviors from this canonical editing, but the Gospel of 12 tells a different story that doesn't fit into that mold. So we'll be back. Continue. I'm James Othajanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio and creator and host of Feet to the Fire. Have you ever noticed the high volume of commercials on most talk shows? It is to the point that it seems like topics are the bait and the guests are the fillers to sell products. I've made a conscious decision to keep disruptions to a minimum and provide more uninterrupted time for the real reason you tuned in. You hear guests with more time to make their points, allowing me and listeners to intuitively and intelligently formulate questions by having less interruptions to break the stream of consciousness. Feet to the Fire may be free to listen to, but it's not free to provide. We rely heavily on donations to offset the expenses of producing the show. If you like what we are doing and enjoy the show, why not consider donating via PayPal or a major credit card from our website, feettofire.com, or send your check or money order to Feet to the Fire, 1147 Brook Forest Avenue, Suite 162, Shorewood, Illinois, 60404. Thank you. Could you feed your family for a year, 2 years, or more from your garden if you had to? Do you have the right kind of seeds? Can you save your seeds from your harvest to plant next year? Heirloom Organics non-hybrid seed packs are sustainable gardening choice of home, homestead, and professional gardeners throughout North America. Heirloom Organic seed packs are designed with your specific space, light, and nutritional needs in mind. A one-pound selection of 22 seed varieties that can feed 2 people for a year for just $99. Got a family? The family pack has 27 seed varieties to feed a family of 4. There's even a homestead pack that has 31 varieties of seeds to feed 8 people for 1 year for under $250. And don't forget, these are organically grown and 100% non-genetically modified. And forget the Terminator gene that prevents you from saving seeds for next year's crop. The heirloom organic seeds can be harvested and saved from each generation to be planted the next year. Just go to our website at feettofire.com and click on the heirloom ad to access a lifetime of natural nutrition and wholesome eating, the way it was meant to be.